Water. Earth. Fire. Air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased, in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series, Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a month had passed, and my cousin and I discovered that Avatar, a show about an airbender named Aang, would start streaming on Netflix in a few weeks. And although our podcasting skills are great, we had a lot of episodes to watch before we were ready to podcast for anyone. But we believe Aang saved us from the chaos of our world. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Welcome back. We're continuing our journey through Avatar, The Last Airbender, now back on Netflix. I'm Andrea. Paul and I are cousins who love fantasy and sci-fi and talk about it pretty much endlessly.
And we decided that we were going to start this podcast so that we could share our observations with you about our favorite shows. It's been a lot of fun so far, and in our first season, we covered His Dark Materials, and our second season, we covered The Witcher, so go and check those out if you're into those shows. Go ahead and leave us some reviews as well. And through our podcast and interacting with the fans, we found a deeper love and appreciation for both of those stories, and that is definitely happening after just two episodes of covering Atla.
Because the episodes of Atla are much shorter than what we previously covered, we changed our format a bit from those podcasts that Paul previously mentioned, The Witcher and His Dark Materials. Each week, we're going to cover a block of episodes rather than just one. We'll provide a summary and talk about the themes introduced and what we learned. Last week, we discussed episodes 5 through 8, and we'll be talking about episodes 9 through 12 this week. So if you haven't watched at least through episode 12 yet, you should go back and watch that before listening to this podcast.
So this podcast will also have adult content.
Yes, it will.
But harsh words won't solve problems. Actions will. So if you're worried about talking about adult themes or having conversations about kissing going down with people other than grand-grand, then you might need to let the kids out the room and go ahead and just, you know, listen to it yourself.
So the first episode that we're going to be talking about this week is The Waterbending Scroll. So our team, Team Avatar, is continuing through their travels. Aang is having a major freak out.
He's spazzing. Like spazzing out, and Sokka's giving him no comfort at all.
I mean, understandably, they just came from the Crescent Island where Avatar Roku just told him that he's got a few months to learn all of the other bending. Like,
and Sokka's like, yo, you took a long time, maybe 100 years to learn airbending. You're pretty good at that. Waterbending, not really so much. And yeah, you could probably do it in another 100 years. So yeah, we're screwed.
Katara offers to help him learn waterbending, even though, let's be honest, Katara's not too strong herself. But
yeah, she's still learning.
But she offers up. And while the two of them practice, they send Sokka off to do some light grooming of Appa. This was so mean.
He's like, clean out Appa's ears. That's what you can do. And meanwhile, Aang is also like ready to go in for a swim with Appa, totally unfocused, rather than like, we're here to learn waterbending. Dude, get your mind right. What is happening?
So on his ship, Zuko's doing a little sparring himself, and he notices the ship is turning.
What is the meaning of this mutiny?
He loses it as well. Everyone's struggling with their emotions.
This guy is just such a freaking drama queen. Like, this mutiny, what are you doing? What is the meaning of this?
Yeah.
My honor.
His uncle informs him that they need to take a little detour because his Iroh has lost his lotus tile, which he needs for his strategy in his Paichao game.
You, like a lot of people, underestimate the importance of the lotus tile. I love Iroh. I love him.
In fairness to Zuko, this was I could see his frustration here. Like, we're trying to chase after the Avatar and you're talking about playing your game.
He gets so excited. He says, we need to do something of utmost importance. He's like, is it something about the Avatar? And he's like, no, I've lost my Lotus Tile in my Paicho game. And I'm like, yo, this dude is, Iroh is the best though. Zuko spits fire literally. And Iroh is like, I'm glad I have such an understanding nephew. What?
I have to say, I was on Zuko's side with this because I was just like, okay, like, just like Aang, Iroh needs to get his priorities in check.
It's true. It's true. But I do love that Iroh believes in self-care. He believes in, you know, having a good time. He's been at war, this war thing for a while. He realizes the downtime needs to be, you know, calculated and done well.
Fair. Yes, this is true. So back at waterbending school, Aang is really outpacing Katara's lessons quite quickly. And she's not taking it well.
This guy skipped the 48 laws of power. He skipped it. Like, you know that part where it's like, never outshine the master? Like, she's not quite a master yet, but she's definitely better than him. He should have just had a little humility would have been nice in this moment.
On both sides. I mean, Katara is trying to teach the Avatar how to waterbend, and she hasn't mastered it herself, and then she's getting upset that he's so good at it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's a fair point, because he has, like, done it over other lifetimes, even if not in this life specifically. So it's probably, you know, it's like muscle memory, right? Riding a bike. Spiritually.
So Aang starts showing off a little bit. He creates a wave that sends all of their supplies down the river. And soaks Sokka and Appa. So, you know, good look on Aang. Really focused here. Really focused. Man. So they end up going to a local village so that they can get some more supplies. Aang spends a third of their money on a whistle. Great, great purchase.
And Katara's like, no offense. I'm going to hold on to the money. You have very bad financial skills. Let me have that, please. Give me those.
Whose idea was it to give Aang the money in the first place? I was shocked by this. I was like, okay. Aang, we know, we love Aang, but like we know... He's 12 years old. Like, come on.
And been in an iceberg for 100 years. He definitely doesn't know how the currency has evolved over time.
He's not accounting for inflation. Like, it's just not, I don't think this is a good idea.
At all.
He also manages to fall for a street vendor's pitch. This guy's out here like, we got the good goods. Aang is like, oh, that sounds great. They go into the shop, which Sokka, you know, a little bit too long later, realizes that it's actually a bunch of pirates.
You guys, wait. Like, cheap goods? Like, shady practices? You guys are pirates! Oh, that's great.
All the merch is lifted with a five-finger discount in the store.
Basically Canal Street. Basically Canal. All right? This is what it is.
So, while they're looking around, Katara finds a waterbending scroll, which the captain says was, you know, lifted from the north. Yeah. Aang tries to haggle with the pirate, but there's just no dice. He's like, I will offer you a single coin. And the pirate's like, nah.
And then he says 20 gold. He goes one copper. Like, and then he goes... Two copper. Like, bro, come on, man. Like, yes, definitely proving our point that he is not accounting for inflation.
Yeah.
Definitely proving.
He's not too good at the haggling. Katara attempts a smooth exit, but the pirates follow them. And once again, they are running through the streets in peril. And this is like a regular thing with these guys. They are briefly reunited with our favorite working class merchant. The cabbage guy.
Cabbages!
Who Aangs destroys his cabbages again!
Yo, this was just egregious, though. This was like, he clears the cabbage stand. There's no reason to do anything else, and he airbends the cabbages into the pirates for no reason. He could have just kept running. This was so rough.
I have to be honest. I was pretty upset by this. I was like unreasonably upset by this. This man had to leave Amashu because they already destroyed his livelihood. Nothing happened to them. They were briefly imprisoned in Amashu. None of the charges stuck. They left. He's found a new place to sell his cabbages. And now they have destroyed his cabbages yet again. Also, where are the cabbages coming from? How many cabbages does this guy have? Like, every time his cabbages get destroyed, he has more cabbages.
This guy's re-up game is crazy.
And since he can't count on the criminal justice system to take care of this, I feel like he needs to go to civil court at this point.
To be fair, he wasn't pushing for a fine. This guy wanted the death penalty. All right. To be fair, like, if he wanted a fine reimbursement, okay, that's civil court. Cool. This guy was looking for criminal charges. It's crazy.
I think he needs recompense for his merchandise and also damages for the emotional distress that Aang and the gang have made him endure.
I feel like we're going to get to try this case a few times. This is the whole situation.
Oh, man. So Aang manages to get them out of there, and they head back to the river where Katara reveals that she actually stole the waterbending scroll. Sokka is not cool of this. I'm on team Sokka here. Mm-hmm. And basically calls her a thief, which is true. Back with Team Zuko, Iroh can't find any lotus tiles at the market, but he's doing a little retail therapy.
Hit up the outlets, you know, take in a couple of the shops. It's mm-hmm. cool, discounts.
They come across the pirates who quickly snitch. I mean, within one sentence, they're like, yeah, the monk got away. And Zuko's like, the monk? Did he have an arrow?
it's just
quick snitches. Katara's trying the new moves from the scroll, and she's not really good, but Aang picks them up right away. And of course, at this point, Katara has had enough. She blows up at Aang. She has to apologize to him. She has to apologize to Momo as well. And then she stops apologizing when it gets to Sokka, because she's
no more apologies.
Yeah, she's
no
done.
More.
She's given out all of the apologies she can. Yeah. Because Zuko is obsessed, he's now coasting down the river looking for Team Avatar. He does spot Katara, who is on her own practicing at night. Really smart, Katara. Really, really smart. And she's very quickly captured. Zuko gives a little speech about restoring his honor, yada, 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 and promises that Katara can have the necklace that he picked up in a previous episode if she gives up her friends. Sokka and Aang wake up to find out that Katara is gone, and they're captured even quicker. They're like, oh, yeah. She's gone. She took the scroll. Oh, we've been captured.
Sokka wants to be captured. What? Am I not good enough to get captured? Yeah, got him. Oh, man.
The pirates have captured them, and they attempt to trade the scroll for the Avatar with Zuko. So Sokka uses some great manipulation tactics to turn the pirates against Team Zuko.
Yeah.
And in the chaos, Team Avatar steals a pirate ship, and the pirates steal Zuko's boat. And a air and water battle ensues. Team Avatar on the pirate ship, Momo against the pirate's lizard bird in the air.
Dropping the scrolls. It's crazy.
Just as the boat is about to go over the waterfall, Aang uses his whistle, which we previously thought was a useless, very useless purchase, and calls Appa, who, per usual, saves the day. I mean,
yeah,
always. Just always.
MVP.
Yeah.
Always there when you need him. And that bison whistle comes in handy. I had a feeling, I was like, well, it does look like Appa. Maybe it's just like, but I knew something was coming later on. And I was like, man, that's really cool. When he shows up and swoops in and saves him. My favorite part, though, one of my favorite parts of that episode is everything Iroh. Like, even when they captured the two of them and they're sitting there negotiating, and Katara's like, Aang, I'm so sorry. And he's like, it's all right, Katara. It's not your fault. And Iroh. Kind of is your fault. He's the man.
Speaking of Iroh, Zuko and Iroh are stuck because they don't have their boat anymore, so they have no ride back to their ship. And Iroh realizes that the lotus tile was in his sleeve the entire time.
That man wanted to go shopping. He knew he couldn't get him to go shopping, like, for some clothes. He's like, I need clothes, some instruments. He got to liven this
instruments
up.
For music night on the ship.
You know, he got with the crew and was like, all right, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to act like I lost the tile. He's going to blow a gasket. Then we're going to get out of here. We're going to buy everything we want. You ready? Let's go. Like, they had that planned out. I promise you.
I mean, Zuko's reaction to this tile showing up is exactly the kind of tantrum I would have thrown. He takes the tile and throws it into the river.
He throws it. It's just wrong. It's wrong. Your uncle just wants to play a game. It's just wrong. Anyway.
As Team Avatar makes their escape, Sokka reveals that he stole back the scroll in the mayhem, and they have the waterbending scroll. And then they all decide that stealing is okay as long as it's from pirates, which, you know, we will comment on the morality later.
Questionable leadership ethics going on this situation. So then that takes us to episode 10, which is Jet. In a forest, Momo gets into some trouble when he's trapped. He's quickly released by Aang, and Sokka tells Katara and Aang that they need to keep moving, but they can't fly because every time they've flown, the Fire Nation has trapped them down because they're basically finding them through locating Appa. After some arguing about who's in charge, Katara and Aang agree to take a walk. This is spoiled. Pretty wild. They're pretty spoiled.
Yeah.
Super spoiled. Like, it's ridiculous.
They're walking for like 5 minutes and Aang is like, this sucks. Like, I don't want to walk anymore. Very spoiled.
And I want to question one thing about Katara's logic about this whole thing about questioning the leadership thing. She basically says, which in a hilarious exchange that we both love, like, you know, if you guys just made out with some girls, you wouldn't be this way, always, like, guys always needing to be in charge. The funniest thing ever was just like, he's like, I made out with girls. Who? Grand? I've met Grand. It's pretty, pretty hilarious. But the thing I want to question here, Katara, I'm telling you, like, these things don't change just because guys make out with girls. That need to be the alpha, that fight between guys as a person who is, you know, I don't know, later in life, it keeps going. So this is flawed logic, rookie mistake. It's all good. We'll give her one. But she did have a point.
I think she does have a point about who needs, like, do they need a leader? You know, I think that was a fair, there's only three of them. I mean, there's five of them if we count Appa and Momo, but Appa and Momo will go wherever they say. So the whole, like, I'm the leader, that's not necessary. Like, she has a point about that.
100% has a point. I'm just saying that they're not going to change no matter what. I'm on her side with this one. I just want to give her a little, like, you know, hey, don't expect these guys to change. They're going to keep doing this. As we see time and time again with Sokka, I like the guy, but he needs a little more bass in his voice. He was going to talk about leading. Did she say he was going through puberty or something like that? Like, his voice was cracking?
Yeah, which was a low dig by her. I really hated it. I really, really hated it. I was just like, his voice cracking has no bearing on his ability to lead. Anyway, Katara's on some stuff, as we see, because
she is.
Yeah, she's on some stuff this episode. I'm going to give her a pass, right? Because all young women go through a period where they are not quite focused. They get a little sprung on good looks, but anyway.
Oh, man. Okay, so they take this walk, and they accidentally, trying to avoid the Fire Nation, they buck up on the Fire Nation, okay? So there it is. They walk right into a Fire Nation camp. The Fire Nation's going to come and try to get them when all of a sudden they are rescued by a teenage boy and his merry men of bandits with a badass entrance from Robin Hood's little brother. He introduces himself as Jet. Katara's taken by him immediately. Speaking to your point.
Yeah, she has some good looks, some slick back hair, some fighting moves, and all of a sudden, our mature Katara is like, huh? What?
He's like, hey there. She's like, hi. Oh. Yeah, so, you know, so basically the guy's got fighting skills. And Sokka's not doing so well in that department. Jet introduces himself and his freedom as Jet and his freedom fighters. His freedom fighters are Snares, Longshot, Smellerbee, the Duke, and Pipsqueak.
What names?
Weird names.
I think Smellerbee is my favorite name.
Smellerbee is a good one. Yeah. It's like, you know, it has character. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it feels like something. So Jet is really smooth. And Katara is instantly throwing shade at her brother while she's flirting with Jet. You know, talking about his instincts. We were following instincts. He's like, well, you'll get yourself killed out here. So they're talking a lot of shit about my guy Sokka. And Jet basically wants to take them to his hideout, quote unquote. It's a treehouse, okay? Like, spoiler. It's a fucking treehouse.
It's
okay?
A nice treehouse.
It is a nice treehouse.
But it's a treehouse.
On the scale of hideout to Ewok village, it's eh. You know what I mean? It's like, it's okay. So Jet tells them that he's been causing trouble for the Fire Nation since they took over a local town. He tells Katara that the Fire Nation made him an orphan by killing his parents when he was 8. This guy is really smooth, and he even manages to entice Sokka to join him by mentioning an important mission that he has for him. The next morning, Sokka stops Jet and his men from attacking an elderly man. They seem to have no pity for him because he's a member of the Fire Nation. Sokka is rightfully so, in my opinion, really disturbed by the incident that he sees, and he tells Aang and Katara they need to leave. The way he does it is hilarious. Your boyfriend Jet is a thug, Katara. To which Katara is basically like, what? Never denying the boyfriend part while holding a hat that she crocheted for him on her spare time since they've been there.
Also, the hat's horrible, but, you know, it was quick. It was quick. Quick turnaround.
It was quick. It wasn't a great hat. So, next scene, Katara wants, she basically is demanding to hear Jet's side of the story. She doesn't believe Sokka. She thinks Sokka's jealous of his prowess as a warrior, and she wants to hear this tale. So she goes there, and Jet comes up with this whole thing about the old man being an assassin, having a poisonous knife. Jet tells Katara that the Fire Nation are planning to burn down a forest. And Katara and Aang say that they will stay, even though Sokka wants to leave. But what I really want you to do is peep out Aang rocking Jet's hat. Like, he literally in the next scene has put on the crocheted hat. Like, yo, I'm going to take this hat. This is one I'm keeping it. Keep my head warm. Rock this ball that you need something to cover it up every now and then. So Jet and the crew are going to blow up a dam and rid the valley of the Fire Nation. But the town would also be destroyed along with the townspeople. Sokka hears the plan, but is spotted and imprisoned. Jet tells Katara and Aang that Sokka apologized and is on his way on a scouting mission, and that, you know, he really is going to need them to bend the water from the steam vent to help them to fill up the reservoir in the dam as part of their plan. Sokka leads Pipsqueak and Smellerbee into the same traps that Momo was caught in earlier so that he can escape, just as Aang figures out what Jet's plan is, and Katara is kind of still spellbound by this fuckboy.
Yeah, totally still spelled. She's like, what? No, he would never. Okay, Katara, let me have a moment with her. I just need a moment to speak directly to Katara.
Help her out.
Katara, you just met homeboy, okay? You met him literally last night. Okay, yes, he saved you. That's great. But you're now taking his word over your brother, who you've known your whole life, and who you know to, yes, be a bit of a hothead, but Sokka doesn't really lie to Katara like that. So I'm like, I don't understand why you're doing this. And now Aang is telling you that he figured out the plan, and you're still like, no, what? He would never. Katara, yes, he would.
Yes, he would.
He would. Yes, and he and would. Is. And I related to Katara because as I said, all teenage girls go through a period where they have a crush on somebody and then they find out that that person is trash. It's a thing that we have to do as young women. So I forgive Qatar, but this was really hard to watch.
I agree.
What are you doing here, Qatar? What are you doing?
I totally agree with everything you just said. Bars, for sure. That is crazy.
End rant. I'm off my soapbox.
Okay. All right. I know it's good stuff because she definitely was feeling this guy so much that she curbed Aang, basically, shaded her brother, like you said, and then just was oblivious. She even took up crafting. It's wild. Anyway, super wild. So Aang tries to outrun Jet so he can stop him. And, basically we get a fight scene that was pretty dope, like over the trees, like a lot of floating over the trees. It really reminded me of a lot of the fight scenes in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, but animated. And it was one of the highlights of the episode for me was this fight scene between Aang and Jet.
Yeah, because Jet doesn't have any bending skills.
Yeah.
So I thought it was pretty cool that, Jet is really giving Aang a run for his money here. Like, he's matching him, even though he can't bend.
Yeah, I agree. It was really dope to see them. And just the way that they were fighting, like I said, in the air, over the trees, through real agility. It was really awesome. I really enjoyed it. So we see, basically that at this point they're fighting. Aang falls to the ground, he hits the ground, and Katara finally has had enough. She doesn't want to see anything happen to Aang, and she intervenes at this point, and she lets her rage totally fuel what she's about to do. She even shows us a new kind of trick she has up her sleeve. She's waterbending, blows a little bit of air, and freezes him against the tree. At that point, there's the signal is given for the dam to explode. Aang wants to go, but now he has holes in his glider and he can't go. And the dam explodes and destroys the village. What we find out, though, because Sokka comes riding on Appa, that he was able to, in the time that he had, which Sokka's pretty fast, he was able to get to the village, warn the village and the Fire Nation to evacuate the village. The old man vouched for him that they saw on the road, and they evacuated all the townspeople so that everyone was safe, even when the dam exploded. And so basically that's how the knowledge of that is how our episode ends, with Sokka saving the day.
Good on Sokka.
Yeah.
Our next episode is episode 11, The Great Divide. This episode is a big fan favorite. Nope, it's not.
Oh, my God, it's not. Oh, so much controversy about this one.
So much drama.
Yeah.
On brand, Katara and Sokka are arguing about some nonsense. Really silly stuff. Aang settles their feud, and the next day, they begin to make their way through the Great Divide.
He's feeling himself, too, when he settles the feud. He's like, see? Just a normal day for the Avatar, settling feuds, making peace, doing my thing. All right, Aang.
These two need to accept their differences, though. You're really arguing about nonsense. Like, Katara, you're type A. Sokka is not. Just let it go.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Just let it go. They come across an angry traveler who seems to be concerned that they may skip the line by using the Canyon's guide services before his tribe, the Ganjin. Bruh is coming on a little strong.
Very.
he's pretty hyped up. Apparently, the canyon guide is also an earthbender, and the only way to get through the canyon is with his help.
Yeah.
Another tribe approaches, the Zhang tribe, and they are not a fan of the Ganjin. They're already get this guy out of here.
There's beef in these streets.
For 100 years, these two tribes have been beefing.
Yeah.
And they're both refugees, right? So you would think that they would have more in common, but they can't get over whatever the beef is. Just as they start to argue, the canyon guide arrives. Aang suggests, because he's the great healer, the Avatar.
Yeah, well, Katara, pretty much volunteers him. She's like, he is the Avatar. He'll tell you what you need to do to fix this. And he's like, okay.
He suggests they go together. This is not a popular take. They start arguing again. Aang says, okay, I will take the sick and elderly, and Appa will fly across the canyon with them, and the rest of you healthy young people can come through the canyon with the guide. We'll all go together. Mm-hmm. The guide, who's doing his best impression of a middle school trip chaperone, tells them there's no food allowed in the canyon. None. Eat all of your snacks. You got 10 minutes to get through all of your food. And then we're out of here.
Oh, my God.
The reason for this is because food attracts animals. And he's basically like, you can go a day without a meal and live. Or you can bring food and die. It's up to you. So the two groups finished.
He sounded like Cuomo out here. he's like, out here sounded like a daily briefing from Governor Cuomo. All right.
He's like, New York tough.
New York tough. Hey, no food. It's not dead. That's all he said. Oh, man.
The two groups finish their meal and head into the Great Divide. The guide tells them the canyon was most likely formed by earth spirits that were angry that farmers were not offering enough sacrifices. And then, you know, a couple seconds later, a giant spider beast that will haunt my dreams attacks the guide and breaks his arm before Aang can banish it and get rid of it. This spider thing is a canyon crawler. I never need to see this again. Like, I was really good with it.
Oh, it's so gross. It's so, so gross.
It is one of the ugliest beasts on Avatar. Like, it is pretty. Also, I'm just don't like spiders, so.
Yeah, it's really, really gross. I'm laughing, though, because this guy is, like, at full meltdown. No bending. I won't die down here. I won't become part of the food chain. Oh, God, it's so good. This is one of the best. He's the relief in this whole episode.
So without his arms, though, they're kind of stuck. Like, if he can't bend, then there's no way to get through the canyon. No. And immediately, the two tribes start arguing. Aang does his best to keep the peace, but he basically decides that he's going to split them up. He sends Sokka with the Zhang tribe and Katara with the Gungeon to learn more about their feud, right? So he's like, you stay with these groups, find out what you can about what the feud is. The Gungeon tell Katara of their tribal forefather, an earthbender named Jingwei, who was tasked with the job of bringing a sacred crystal orb from the gate in the east to the gate in the west as part of a redemption ritual. They claim that as he neared the western gate, Jingwei was assaulted by a thief, a Zhang named Wei Jin, who stole the orb out of greed. The Zhangs tell Sokka a different story, that their ancestor Wei Jin found Jingwei passed out on the ground near the western gate. Wei Jin stopped to help the man and was told about the redemption ritual and the orb's importance. Rejecting assistance, Jingwei asked Wei Jin to take the orb back to his tribe, which Wei Jin did. When he arrived at the entrance to the village, Jingwei's tribe arrested him for stealing the orb and imprisoned him for 20 years. So these two stories don't match up, right? They have like some basic outline, but there's a difference between stealing and helping, right? So there seems to be some confusion, and I have questions about this. Both of these stories don't make a whole lot of sense, but you know, it's fine. It's fine. This is their ancient beef.
But that's how conflict is, right? Like, a hundred years, that story's been passed down over and over and over a million different times, right? So that's probably not accurate on either side.
Oh, yeah, of course. In the morning, the groups come back together, and Aang asks them to figure out how to get out of the canyon together. The leaders of the group enter into a fight to the death, which... It was like a crazy escalation.
Yeah, well, he goes, words do nothing. Action does. And then they're like, you know what? The Avatar's right. Let's duel. Oh, my goodness. What? That's what you took from this. They had very different meanings. Very, very different.
Aang totally loses his shit at this point. He's had enough. As just like a chaperone of a middle school trip at the end of the day, you're like, I need to go to happy hour. Like, this is too much. These kids are too much.
Especially after he finds out that both of them pretty much
smuggled
the rule.
Yeah.
Smuggled food in.
Yeah, both groups smuggled food in. Aang's also hangry because him and the guide are the only ones who haven't eaten. So yeah. He just loses it. He's eyeing some of the food that, you know, they bought, both tribes bought, just as a horde of canyon crawlers descends upon the group. And if one of these things was frightening, there's like dozens. This was terrifying. I hated it.
And then the canyon guide is like, they're back for me. They got a taste and they're back for more.
The canyon guide is the best.
I love him.
At Aang's suggestion, the groups come together to trick the angry beast and ride out of the canyon on their backs. The harmony doesn't last very long, and then Aang spins a tale about the ancestors that's really about a game called Redemption, which is basically like soccer, and 2 8-year-old brothers.
And when you'd score, one would say, Redemption! Aang, what?
The two tribes reconcile because of Aang's lies. We'll get to this in a minute. And even the canyon guide decides to join them. He's done. He says he's had enough of going through the canyon.
He's had enough.
Can we just talk about how Aang lied to these guys so that he could get them to work out their problems?
I mean, this is gaslighting 101, right? This is like the basic definition to like manipulate people through lies about like, you know, something, shared history, and get what you want out of it. And I have some issues with a couple of things here. I don't feel like a lot of fans, I'm new to the fandom, so a lot of fans hate this episode, say it's the worst episode in the history of the show. I haven't gotten to the point where I think that's it yet, but I do think this. I do think there's some issues. There's things I love and things I question. The things I really like about it is that moment where Aang is by himself and the guide comes up to him and he says, it's really lonely, isn't it? Like being the person who's like the reconciliator, the peacemaker. And you get a real sense of this person, Aang, who's realizing what it means to be the Avatar more than he probably ever has in this kind of silly moment, but it is a moment where he's coming to terms with, oh, I'm going to have to do this on a greater scale, and I'm having a lot of struggles with doing this here, and I'm hungry, and I have to sacrifice when other people are unwilling to. That is a real powerful part in the episode. The part that's lame is that he just totally lies at the end and makes up some tale that feels really far-fetched. Like when the kid animation comes in and it's a soccer game, I'm totally out of the episode at that point. I can't even, what just happened? Like, where are we? Until he comes back and says it's a lie, I felt like I'm not going to move on past this episode until I understand what I missed. And literally him coming back and saying a lie makes it better, but it still makes us question Aang's character, because he hasn't been this way ever in the show. So it's a very strange moment for him. That's kind of what I feel like, and that they're okay with it and laugh it off. Again, the stealing, the lying. This feels very strange in comparison to what we've seen from him in this run of episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the major themes of like the show is that nothing is really black and white, right? So I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of okay with the questionable ethics and morals of Team Avatar, sure. Because that's realistic, right? Like, there's leadership is not always squeaky clean. What I'm not okay with is that basically, like, back-to-back episodes of questionable morals. I guess for me, this episode seemed out of character for the show, just because I didn't feel like this moved the plot along very much. It was kind of just, it almost felt like a filler episode, and maybe that's what it was. I liked some of the themes in it, right? We're going to talk about some of the themes that we took from this block of episodes totally. So I did like the idea of redemption, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought the theme about the two tribes coming together was great. But I don't know. I feel like it could have been done in a different way that would have moved the story a little bit further along. And it definitely takes you out of the rhythm of the season a bit. And it's right in the middle of the season. This is this is a season. It's about 20 episodes and we're at episode 11. And I felt like it was almost like a break. This episodes that came before this block were pretty heavy. So I wonder if that was part of the rationale behind the writing, was to have a few lighter episodes that didn't feel nearly as consequential. But they do introduce new characters that we will meet again.
I feel what you're saying. And I don't want to stay here too long because I know we want to talk about some other the next episode and then talk about some of our themes. But I do want to say that I've thought about this episode a bunch because I remember texting you pretty close to after I right in the midst of it, like, Aang is out here gaslighting whole tribes of people, and we laughed about it through text, like, this is crazy. But as I've watched it a couple of times now, one thing that I think really resonates with me is that petty squabbles like that we all have over time really don't amount to much. After long periods of time, we end up like forgetting what they even were about. Mm-hmm. So Aang presenting this really crazy story that's totally left field in some ways is appropriate, right? Because really the feud was not even the people who were alive then aren't alive now. And we're just kind of like indoctrinated. They even did it with Sokka and Katara. They're indoctrinating people with a story that has already like long been gone. So it's like showing how resentments get passed down and to highlight that and then highlight the Avatar being this kind of like Buddhist kind of thing where he says the middle way, right? There's a middle way. There is a line that you can go down that is not, you know, looking at rightness and wrongness that can find peace in this whole situation through sacrifice and him like kind of doing those things. It's very kind of interesting that they took out not being able to eat in this thing because that's like something that's, you know, like you're almost like fasting in that moment and him finding this clarity of like the middle way. So to me, there's like some really powerful parts of this episode. The execution just was lacking, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with that. I can understand why longtime fans don't like this episode or skip it when they come to do their rewatch. Like, I get it. It for me, when I first watched through this season, it definitely was an episode where I was like, I don't fully understand why this was included. But
yeah,
but you're right. There were some great themes in here. I just thought the resolution was bizarre.
It was totally bizarre. It threw me off. I'm not going to lie, because the animation style even changed a little bit. It was weird. I was like, where did these kids come from? How did they end up with a game? Is this really how you're going to resolve this whole thing? Like, this was I was in it. So I was like, whoa. And then it kind of just, you know, made me come out of the story a little bit. So, so I'm with you on that. Consequently, though, totally opposite, episode 12, The Storm, happens to be one of the ones I really, really love. I love this episode, which starts with Aang in the midst of a dream. He's flying with his friends, and then suddenly they vanish, and a storm begins. Aang sees Monk Gyatso, who asks him why he disappeared. He hears the voices chanting, "We need you," just as he and Appa fall into the ocean out of the sky. Aang awakes from his bad dream, worrying about worrying both Katara and Sokka. Sokka reports he also had a dream. He wants to know, did you guys want to hear his dream? Not really, bro. Like, we're good. Like, we just want to sleep. So so the next morning, right, Katara lets them know that they're out of food, and Sokka said that in his dream he saw that they would be out of food. And then they ask him, well, what happened? And he says, the food eats people, and they hand wave that. And then he says, and Momo was really mean to me. Like, and it's pretty hilarious.
You said some mean things.
You said some mean, mean things. So Team Zuko at this moment is sailing along with when Iroh announces that a storm is coming. The skies are completely blue, but Iroh, with all his years of experience, knows that there's a storm coming. Zuko doesn't care. He wants to continue and says that the crew's safety doesn't matter to him, to which one of the crew members actually overhear it and is, you know, a little irritated by it. Realizing that they're also out of money and food back with Team Avatar, Katara suggests that Sokka should get a job. Well played. Maybe he should. Overhearing a fisherman and his wife, the fish hauler, arguing about the coming storm, Sokka volunteers to take her place because he hears him say that he'll pay double. And he's like, who said I paid double? I'm not paying double.
Yeah, he was like, where did you hear that?
Nah, it's not happening. So things are not going well for Team Zuko either. The captain of his ship calls him out about the way that he talks to everyone. The crew and his uncle and everyone on the ship. At this point, it looks like it's about to get down to a duel, which seems to be like the trend that's happening in Zuko's life. Like, he keeps ending up in these situations. And you know, Iroh says, okay, no, everybody is just like really like getting tight because we're all been on this boat for so long. Let's let cooler heads prevail. And he separates them. Back at the docks, the fish merchant has realized that Aang is the Avatar and gets pretty rude about it. He lets him know that he disappeared over 100 years ago. Like Zuko, Aang's feelings are hurt at this moment and he takes off. Katara goes after him and finds him really down and kind of pouty in a cave, right? He's upset. Aang tells Katara about when the monks told him that he was going to be the Avatar. The monks knew because of the toys that he chose as a child. They were all Avatar relics, items from past Avatars' lives. Gyatso told him that although he would have informed him at 16, that there were troubling signs and that a storm is coming. This theme of a storm still playing out from the beginning to now to as we continue. Once it is known that Aang is the Avatar, his friends begin to turn to shun him. They act differently towards him. He can't play in their games anymore because of his advantage. They don't feel like it's going to be fair. Gyatso tries to protect Aang from the burdens of being the Avatar, as well as understanding that he's young and cannot spend all of his time training. The leaders, I kind of co-signed that. I thought that was like kind of like how Iroh is with Zuko. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, you got to have some time, some downtime.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Gyatso is being realistic, right? Aang needs to be a child and have some joy in his life. There's got to be some, that being the Avatar can't all be about burden.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. So the leader of the monks tells Gyatso that Aang must be sent to the Eastern Air Temple because to complete his training. Basically saying that, you know, their relationship is getting in the way of Aang doing what he needs to do as the Avatar. Aang overhears this and runs away during a storm. He and Appa fell from the sky into the ocean, and Aang somehow used his bending to protect them, and that's how they ended up in the iceberg that we started out this journey with. Aang is really down and full of guilt. Back on Zuko's ship, some of the crew is just shit-talking Zuko. They're like, I'm tired of his shit. Like, this guy is just always saying what he wants to do and chasing after the Avatar, and Iroh decides that he's time to basically tell them about the prince's past. In a flashback, right? Zuko attends a meeting of the Fire Lord's War Council. He is warned not to speak by Iroh. Iroh brings him in but tells him, these guys get offended, don't speak, keep quiet. But when a general says that he's planning to use some of the Fire Nation soldiers as bait in the battle, Zuko speaks up. He talks about how loyal these soldiers are to the Fire Nation and how can we just use them as sacrifices. The general does not take it lightly, and the dispute must be settled by a fire duel. Zuko is prepared to fight, as the general says, fight the general. But what he didn't understand is that by disrespecting the general inside the Fire Lord's chamber, he actually disrespected the Fire Lord, his father. And so Zuko now discovers that he must fight his father instead of this general. Zuko attempts to apologize and refuses to fight his father. His father refuses to back down and burns him anyway, which is how he gets the burn on his face.
Horrible. This was a horrible... The Fire Lord is the uber villain of this series. Like, he's terrible.
Yeah, it's really terrible. I don't know how you treat your kid that way.
Well, you That's can sort rough. Of understand the savagery of the Fire Nation. If their leader is willing to harm his own child in this way, then you can't imagine that they would have any empathy or sympathy for the people that they're oppressing. It's really terrible.
Yeah, I agree. And I would say to first time watchers, I watched this episode a few times, and obviously I've gone further beyond this episode. Keep an eye on the people inside these scenes. I'm not going to say more than that, but there's a few people cameos I was like on the second watch. I'm like, whoa, that person was there. Crazy. Anyway, that's what I'm going to put a pin in that. So this is a pivotal scene anyway in this flashback that you'll see. So the Fire Lord banished him and told him that the only way to restore his honor is by returning with the Avatar. This shows you why he's pretty obsessed with finding the Avatar. Both Aang and Zuko find some redemption in the storm when Aang has to rescue Sokka, and the fishermen and Zuko save one of the crewmates and then choose the safety, and he chooses the safety of his men over chasing after the Avatar in the storm. Aang also manages to activate his Avatar state to save his friends and fly Appa out of the eye of the storm, and the fisherman apologizes and thanks Aang for saving his life. You know, Sokka wants a little bit of that bread he was talking about. He says, man, get this fish and get out of my face.
Yeah, when he gives him the fish. First of all, I was kind of like, Sokka, like, you guys wanted food, so.
Yeah, exactly.
This is what, exactly. You didn't even complete your job, so at least he's giving you some fish.
Totally, 100%. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about the major themes that we saw in this block of episodes. You want to start it off?
Sure. So coming off of this past episode, I think the main one is redemption, right? Which is a thread through several of the episodes, redemption and forgiveness. When we hold on to the past, we allow it to control the present and the future and corrupt our sense of self and our place in the world. You see this especially with Aang, because he's just completely wrecked by guilt. He feels terrible that he ran away, that he wasn't around for 100 years. You also see it in some other characters as well. Jet's anger over the murder of his parents at the hands of the Fire Nation lead him to consider the lives of others as collateral damage. So these folks are sort of controlled by their past and what the trauma that has brought them to where they are. Jet will do anything to avenge his parents, no matter what the cost is, including slaughtering innocents. You see it with the Zhang and the Ganjin. They're holding on to this past feud, and they put themselves at a disadvantage. Their hatred for the other tribe has potentially deadly consequences. And finally, in this last episode, both Aang and Zuko have to confront holding on to their mistakes in the past, and what it's done to them, you know? So Aang is overwhelmed by his guilt. Zuko is full of rage because he was hurt by his father and stripped of his honor. And both have to decide to let it go so that it doesn't corrupt their actions in the future and present. My personal opinion is that Aang got there, right? The two tribes got there. They were able to let go of the past. Jet and Zuko, however, have not fully let go, right? We see some growth from Zuko, but not as much as I would like to see from him.
Yeah. No question. He's still kind of holding on because, you know, offline, we kind of talked about a little bit, as you astutely said, like, you know, it's not him that's reflecting on this. It's his uncle reflecting on this. So it's interesting.
Right. So we get a better understanding of who Zuko is. I don't know that he's fully realized it yet. Aang, however, is reflecting on what happened to Katara. And so he's able to kind of work through the motions and forgive himself and understand that his place in the world now is important as well, even though he missed 100 years.
Totally agree. And in holding, another theme that comes up is in holding on to the past, right? Sometimes that just as burdensome is thinking about your future, your destiny, right? And this burden of destiny is another theme. Like, Aang and Zuko seem to be linked through a destiny that neither one of them can truly grasp or put a finger on at this moment in their story, individually and together. And one moment in particular stands out for me that we talked about is when leaving the water during this storm, Aang on the back of Appa and Zuko on his boat, they lock eyes as he's leaving through the eye of the storm. Both of them carry this weight of duty and the story that they intuitively share based on Aang's divinely given mission as the Avatar and Zuko as a mandate from his father that he's always wanted the love and acceptance from. But each of them are finding more clarity in their individual destiny as they're working towards it, like we're speaking about. Poetically, it's happening in the eye of a storm, right? Which is supposed to be the calmest part of a chaotic surrounding. And the two of them are, you know, basically working on trying to find peace with what they have been through in their life in the midst of being in this kind of tumultuous surrounding of the world that they inhabit. So this destiny and this burden of what's to come is something that you see weighing on the characters previously in all these episodes we've been talking about. But I think we're going to see this as a theme of something they're working through moving forward to.
Yeah, and it is all the themes of this. It's an inward and outward journey, right? So it's not just that they're reflecting upon their individual stories and their destiny as individuals, but obviously it's a linked destiny that's important to the fate of this world. It's totally. It's both something that they need to, they're holding onto that burden internally, but it is actually a burden because they mm-hmm. both have an important role to play in the overall story and how it ends. So I think it's definitely going to be a recurring theme. Just like redemption and forgiveness, all of the themes are inward and outward, and reconciliation is another one. The Zhang and the Ganjin tribes must learn to come together over their past feuds and decide to move forward as one tribe. But in order to do that, they must have a calming understanding of what transpired. While Aang's story is a lie... Right?
Totally.
It also becomes a common history. A misunderstanding was what tore them apart. You know, it's two parts of the same story, but they understood it differently. Aang's story is one story, one that they can both agree on. And they're able to move forward through as one tribe when they acknowledge this. Now, the same is true, you know, in different ways for Aang and Zuko. They have to confront their past in order to forgive themselves and move forward. As I said, Aang is able to do this. Zuko, not so much. But the forgiveness is sort of an inward thing that they have to do. Zuko, I think, will have to also learn if he can ever move forward and forgive his father. But this is going to be a major plot point and a major point of development for both Aang and Zuko. This idea of reconciliation as well as destiny and redemption. All of these things kind of work together.
100% they work together. And it's interesting just to see, like, you know, these are real, you know, themes that we all wrestle with in, you know, life and navigating the world. And to see that this was, you know, laid out, you know, really in, you know, we've grown and, like, you know, as adults, we love it, but it was laid out not for both adults and for kids to be able to enjoy and to get these kind of themes and these kind of understandings. You know, it's made us both reflect on, man, what else were in, like, some of the shows that we used to watch when we were younger, because there's a lot here and there's a lot that you can really think about and chew on. And it's really showing you the beauty in how this story is laid out from the thematic standpoint. Even if in an episode, like, you know, in this run that we didn't like The Great Divide, there's still themes that are so, like, relevant and to any moment of life that you're in. And I think it's just a beautiful part of this story that I'm just, every episode I find more and more that I love about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I would like us to do for a future podcast is really explore some of the, like, the spiritual and religious themes too, because a lot of this is, I'm not a Buddhist, but I've read Buddhist work. And a lot of this are, these are themes from Buddhism and Hinduism. And I think it's very interesting. So I'd love to explore that in a future podcast for sure.
Sure, sure, for sure. I would love that as well. I mean, like, as I was doing a little research for today's episode, I was thinking a lot about, like, okay, well, what does it mean to actually be an avatar? What is that? And in Hinduism, it is about a spiritual reincarnation of a deity. So we should, you know, investigate that. And this is interesting because that's who Aang is. So it's really cool. And let's talk about that, right? So we found out a little bit about Aang as an avatar. Like, what did we learn about Aang?
So we finally understand how he came to be in the iceberg, right? Mm-hmm. So he ran away, essentially because becoming the avatar meant separating him from what he loved. It meant that him and Gyatso wouldn't be able to work together anymore. It meant his friends saw him in a different way. And so his decision to run away had dire consequences for the world, but you can understand why a 12-year-old would react the way he did. I could totally relate to wanting to get away from, you know, what you called the burden of his destiny, because it's too much for him. So this is Aang's sort of origin story as the Avatar. As soon as he found out that he was the Avatar, he fled from it, which is understandable, but also had massive consequences. I mean, it led to a 100-year struggle for the rest of the world.
Massively, yeah. And that is really powerful to think, you know, one person's, how much one of our actions can really impact a lot of people, have a ripple effect. And then we also learn about Zuko's story, right? We learn about what he's gone on about forever, his honor. Right? So we find out what's going on. We finally learn Zuko got, how he got his scar, that his scar was given to him by his father, not in an accident like many people believe inside the Fire Nation, but actually in a fire duel. And this is how he lost his honor, by not fighting his own father or even attempting to bring harm to him. He was actually harmed and lost his honor. He tried to stand up for what was right for the Fire Nation with the general in the room. He just basically didn't want to sacrifice soldiers that he thought were loyal and new and just, like, you know, really, like, cared about the Fire Nation as a whole. And we, just so that they could gain an advantage over the Earth Kingdom, it didn't feel right to Zuko. And Zuko's courage was seen as an act of disrespect, and he was ready to face the consequences. But instead of facing those consequences in a way that he thought, he was punished and harmed and banished by his father, basically in an arrogant and cruel way. And so we find out why Zuko is so one note, so, as we've joked about, so driven to bring in the Avatar, because he wants to restore what, truthfully, in my opinion, if he would just look deeper within, he already has. Like, he already has honor. It was very honorable what he said about the people in the army that he didn't want to sacrifice. It's just that what he's struggling with is the fact that people's perception of him that he cares about don't view him as honorable more than him not having honor.
Right. So I think this is a larger question of, like, is honor something from within, or is honor something that can be bestowed upon you? I think that Zuko definitely thinks that honor is something that is about the perceptions of other people and what can be bestowed upon you, gifted to you. But is it really? No, because Zuko, we know that in this moment when he is being disrespectful, he's not really, right? He's trying to be honorable. He's trying to stand up for what's right. So I think that, you know, Zuko's going to have to figure out for himself going forward, is honor something that someone can just grant you? Can his father just say your honor is restored? Or is it something internal? Is honor about what you know about yourself or what other people know about you?
Indeed. So we have come to the end of this block of episodes. You know, words mean nothing. Actions do. So please go.
Wait, are we
and
gonna
leave
fight to the death now?
No, we're not going to. Okay. We're not going to do it. But what we are going to do is we're going to ask you to go leave comments and ratings on the pod. It really, really helps with us being able to, you know, get more people to see the pod and just get more people into our community talking about this story. So share it with friends and, you know, do that. Leave comments and ratings and check out some of the blogs that we have on our website, kinfolklore.com. And also, like, follow us on Instagram, kinfolklorepod, or Twitter, kinfolklorepod, or join our Facebook page.
Yeah, thank you guys for coming along with us, and we will see you next week.
See you next week.